Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca, with co-host, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson, and community organizer and socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webno.com. Just a quick reminder for folks, please rate, review, turn on your notifications and subscribe. Thank you. Today we will be discussing the Bolivian elections, which took place on Sunday. And this is a topic that Kenny and I, well, Kenny informed me to discuss for this week. So I'll hand over it over to Kenny so that he can give us a sort of a brief synopsis of what's going on in Bolivia.
I guess maybe let me share why I thought it was important to discuss Bolivia. So every week we discuss it, you know, different topic, you know, what's relevant. And to me, Bolivia sticks out, especially if, you know, from what happened a year ago in the elections in November, where the Organization of American States called fraudulent elections. And so it basically forced Evo Morales out of power. And Evo Morales has been accused of being a dictator and dictatorial tendencies by a lot of, you know, foreign powers. And so under pressure, under threat of violence, and the military throwing their support against, for the opposition, I guess, of Evo Morales resigned and fled the country. So he's currently in exile. And so the elections happened on Sunday. And it was kind of a reaffirmation of what was happened last elections, or at least it kind of, it goes back to what happened before, what happened now. And I think that the analysis kind of sheds light into what actually happened in November last year. Okay. So in November last year, the elections were held and in November, and there is a long count. And there's a formal count of the votes, and there is also a short count, a quick count that is shared to the public. And this is in the Constitution of Bolivia. And so the short count, the quick count, is reported, and it just shows a snapshot of what's happening. So the trend was that Evo Morales, the party was winning, not with the majority they needed to avoid a second round of elections. And for some reason, the electoral college or the electoral officials decided to cut the count at about 83% of the total votes being counted. And so Evo Morales was leading not by the 10% that he needed as a margin of difference, and not by the 52% that he needed to avoid a complete, second round of elections. So they decided to cancel the quick count, and the opposition called foul, saying that, you know, that looks suspicious. Why are you stopping this reporting, even though they've done this in previous elections in Bolivia? It's been known that they've stopped it at around 85%, and so it wasn't that unusual. And so the next day they restarted reporting the quick count. And at that point, about 93-95% of the total votes were counted. And Evo Morales had just enough over the 52% he needed to avoid a second round election or a runoff. And he also had just over the 10%. And so, but before, so again, this is the unofficial count. And then this is where the Organization of American States comes in, and they claimed, and they call fraud. They said there's something suspicious. You know, this is not, this looks fishy without any evidence. They just made a claim. And so that set the country in turmoil. The police mutiny in major cities, the military put their support, or they basically called for Evo Morales to resign. And so he, under pressure, fled the country. And again, the question is, was that claim by the American, the Organization of American States, valid. And so bring us to now. What happened this last Sunday is that even after 25% of the votes counted, the count was so overwhelmingly in favor of the Evo Morales party that they claim that Evo Morales' ally, Luis Arce, is the new president. So it reaffirmed what was happening in the last elections. We said that, you know, the mass party, Movimiento al Socialismo, or the party of movement towards socialism, has massive support. And again, these elections were held under the scrutiny of the current administration in power, a right-wing administration legitimized by the U.S., legitimized by the Organization of American States. And despite, so they can claim foul now. And it was so overwhelming that even only through 25%, the opposition conceded. And so now they're poised to take control of power again, the party of Evo Morales, even though he's in exile.
This was something that I had heard about last year when there were many calling out Evo Morales for trying to take on a fourth term, and people calling it also fraudulent elections by the people in the beginning, and then he did flee to Mexico at first. That's how I had heard of this, because it was in the news there. And I suppose this is important in the sense related to elections, that I see a connection as the importance as to why it was brought up, Kenny, is because there is strong support for Áñez, or there was support for Áñez by the U.S. political ruling class. But anytime there is some form of a populist movement happening on the left side, there are certain forces within the U.S. state that are going to try to meddle with the elections. And this is the connection I can see as to why I thought it is related to what we've been talking about recently in our most recent episode 2 weeks ago, when we discussed the meddling of the elections by other states onto the USA. I think that this is quite like in Honduras as well, with Hillary Clinton not actually stating that it was a coup. And also the meddling of the elections in Venezuela by the US, and as well as in Nicaragua. And has always been the USA meddling with other people's elections, but when it happens to them, all of a sudden it's called out as the most worst thing that anything could be done. And it just shows the hypocrisy. So I suppose that from that angle, it is quite related to what the discussions that we've been having in the U.S. That's how I see the importance of this. So I appreciate that you brought it up.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd like to talk about, because the left is celebrating these results, and I think I want to talk eventually about that. Because I think I have questions. No, I don't celebrate these results. I'll tell you that right now. And I think it portends another comeuppance for the working class in Bolivia and internationally as a result of these events. But I'll get to that, because I do think there's something to be discussed here about what happened in 2019 and the U.S. Like there's so much levels of hypocrisy with the U.S. around, say, Russiagate or intervening with elections. You know, the U.S. literally foments a coup in Ukraine, and there's a claim that Russia is maybe putting a small little finger on the U.S. elections, and they talk about it as if I'm not even sure they're doing that, honestly, or at least the effect. And they make it seem like it's the worst thing ever, like election, like the U.S. democracy is being subverted. when the U.S. has its entire arm in the Bolivian elections and Venezuelan elections and all sorts of Central American elections. And it took many forms, right? The Organization of American States is basically a U.S.-led grouping, and they use it politically to put pressure on any resistance that might put pressure on a left-wing government, whether it be Cuba or Venezuela, or even in Colombia when it was pushing back at times with FARC and the movements there. But the other part is the U.S. The U.S. has the school of what was used to be called the School of Americas. It's been renamed something about the hemisphere cooperation or something like that. But what it is a training center of military people who are sent into who are trained in the United States and sent into Central America and South America. And they exist there as generals and higher up officials. And these are the people that they contact when they want to overturn a government. And so the blueprint for getting rid of Morales was not just one of, you know, saying, oh, that was a fraudulent election and making that up, which was, I do think that was just made up by the United States. They just make a claim maybe it has no truth. And then they just put in all they use all these bodies, whether it be external bodies, whether it be internal bodies, like the military, to create essentially foment a crisis in the country and then push that leader out. In reality, I actually think that blueprint that the U.S. has used over and over and over again to push changes in other countries through the CIA and through government pressures, through the IMF and World Bank and its effect on institutions, through the Organization of American States, through the School of Americas, all these different institutions that the U.S. has. I actually believe this is what the U.S. is doing here when they have spent the last year preparing its own citizens for an electoral crisis. I believe that in the same way that they use the panic that they spread in Bolivia to overturn one election, that same panic is being spread right now so that the U.S. can put in place the leader they want. Is that leader Trump? Is that leader Biden? I don't know. But here's one thing I do feel, is I do feel like we're being set up to pretty much be exposed to a U.S. election that's going to be run like a Central American election or a South American election, where the U.S. is putting its entire hand on the operation and trying to make sure that it gets the outcome it wants. So that's what I would say. Yes, there's partly the stuff I've said about how election fraud has been exposed in the DNC and the Democratic National primaries and things like that. That the numbers, the difference between exit polls and the actual numbers that came out are standard highlights for fraud in any South American election. But in reality, the U.S. operation in Bolivia is right now the exact, I think, is a blueprint for what the U.S. is right now doing in the United States prior to its election in 2 weeks. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that you bring that up, because again, the Bolivian case is not new. Like the model, the blueprint that you said is happening many, pick your country basically in South America. And they've installed right-wing military heads to rule by force and impose their will on people. So this is what they've attempted to do in Bolivia. And so it's funny because it reminds me of Russiagate. Russiagate from the left, from the liberal left, is essentially that, because one of the things that they always accuse South America and any other countries is that people are too ignorant. People are manipulated, you know, to be able to elect someone like that. You know, that people don't know what they want, that people need to be educated, basically. And so that's what the claims that are here in the U.S. from, you know, the right wing, that they, how could they, you know, they couldn't have done it without, you know, because they're so ignorant, they're backwards. And so there is an element of, you know, like condescending or, you know, attitude of superiority and some racism too, because even like, I think that was one of the topics we might have discussed this week, but, you know, when black artists or black prominent people pull behind Trump, the left accuses them of them having something wrong with their head.
Like 50 Cent.
Exactly.
So, Ice Cube.
Yeah, and so the left accuses them of being, you know, like I think Lipson, you said this, like as if like the Democrats own Black people and Latino people, and so that's actually racist, you know, to say that, you know, people don't come up to their own conclusions as to why they're supporting Trump.
Yeah, can I be clear about the Ice Cube thing? Ice Cube never supported Trump or Biden. He just was willing to meet with Trump people over his plans for trying to get money into the Black community. So I just want to be clear about that. Is I think Kanye West and 50 Cent have actually said they supported Trump, but Ice Cube just said, I don't support either of these fools because I think they're both against me, but I'm willing to make a deal with anybody who's willing to talk to me. And Biden told me, like, we'll talk to you after the election, and the Trump people were willing to talk to me now. And for that, people went after Cube, but I don't want to go too far into that.
And I would say, you know, Eduardo, you pointed out something important that, you know, some people might, which I get short memory or like a myopic view of politics, would look at Trump and say, oh yeah, this is a racist dude doing something racist in Bolivia. But you brought up Honduras. Obama and Hillary did the same thing in Honduras. You know, they directly intervened in those elections. They celebrated that. Say they did it in Libya, or, you know, like politics in Libya, and they celebrate that in public. And they're so, you know, braced to even like make a celebration out of it. You know, and the ruling class overall. You know, I wanted to bring up Elon Musk. You know, stating in a tweet, but he stated that basically we, the U.S., we will coup anybody we want, and you better deal with it. You know, and this is a person that will benefit from American companies having a hand in the Bolivian lithium, you know, for whatever BS green revolution, you know, that he's supposed to lead. And so there is hypocrisy, and ultimately the goal of the ruling class is to get their hands, you know, put the people, their hands in these resources, you know, put the people they want, they can handle, or that, you know, have the interest of the U.S. in their mind. And, you know, it's not, racism doesn't come just from a white dude towards, you know, people of color. That's what I'm saying, you know, and so this whole thing is racist. You know, capitalism is racist, period. And it doesn't matter who executes it. But we seem to have this notion that racism is only white on Black, or, you know.
I wanted to just touch on what you said, though, that some people think that people don't vote based on being informed, and how the left almost patronizes, no, the people who might support such a right-wing populist movement or any other candidate that's not of their own on the left. Do you think that, I guess, I'm struggling around this, but I'm wondering if you, either anyone can answer this, that most people are informed on political policies and politics of the society and what's going on. I'm grappling with that, just to be honest. But and then I'm not just saying in South America, or I'm talking about the U.S. And in anywhere really. I've always grappled with that notion, just even in conversations when I'm talking with people, how much there are gaps within the understanding of what's going on. And also how much now, especially maybe because I also grew up in the social media sphere, you know, how much information they're getting. Like for my cousins, I when I talk to them, a lot of things they say. I have 18 cousins on the side of my father's side. They're my primos hermanos. And I speak to them, and we're in a group WhatsApp chat. And the stuff they post sometimes, the way they conclude about things, it's not very, I'll just judge my own family, it's not very critically thought out.
For me, the point is to have discussions, not to tell anybody anything. You know, like, this is what I think. What do you think? And I do think people are informed by their material realities. You know, the reason I think white people or people, not just white people, you know, it's like people are turning to the right wing. Let's stop. If you look at it, at the picture globally, it's not just white people turning to right, the right wing. It's not. India is massive and they have a right wing, you know, president currently. You know, Philippines, they have a fascist right wing, you know, president right now. In Europe, I think, I don't know what country, they just elected another right wing. Central America, the same thing. You know, what I see, so yes, people are making an informed decision. They're being informed with their material realities that, you know, these people that spoke of liberation or, you know, inclusion and prosperity, you know, in, you know, these with liberal faces have looted their lives. So of course they're going to have a reaction. You know, and yes, we're not, you know, completely coming to, we're not having discussions. That's true. But let's not assume that they're the only ones misinformed. You know, like, and that's kind of the point. And that's what we're so screwed in the US, I believe, that we are condescending and we're not accepting that the most probably economically abused over the last 30, 40 years after NAFTA have been white people. And so, you know, you have a white man that is particularly influenced by platitudes of, you know, hard work and American nationalism, you know, and that they're supposed to be doing well, but they're not. Of course, they're going to have a reaction. And then our response on the left is shame, shame, shame. There's no political space for them. There is no answer for their plight. And so that's not just happening in the US. That is also very myopic. It's happening worldwide.
Like I said, I am grappling with it. I do find that, take COVID, for example. You either have people who believe it is the most dangerous thing that could destroy you, that we need to take very extreme precautions, no? And then you think people on the other side who think it's a hoax, and you don't have this middle ground where, all right, let's put this into perspective, you know, there are lots of survivors of COVID and we should try to, you know, telling the folks on this side and then and telling the people on the other side saying it's not a hoax, you know. But you know, I have friends who won't even greet me, who won't even come out of their homes. They are locked in this confinement and watching everything as the plastic utensils come in from the curbside pickup thing, are leaving books for 64 hours. And I don't, all these measures. And then you have other people who are also just being stupid and also getting COVID-19, and hopefully they survive, but I'm just saying that they also don't believe in it and they think it's a hoax. So there's no informed decision where we're able to make actual practical choices, because people go and have these, I don't know where they're getting their information or where these people are getting their information from. And I just feel as if most people are not quite aware, is the word, maybe I should say.
I'm not going to get into the COVID thing, because I think that just brings another layer to this.
But it's about just things in general that people right. get their information, their source from.
I will bring back the election. And so we're going to come to 2020, I believe. But in 2016, Trump ran as an anti-establishment candidate. And the people behind him saw him as an anti-establishment candidate. And I think there was some reality, like the people who said he was anti-establishment or felt that way, they were misinformed because he was going to be a member of the ruling class, but they were responding to something real, which is the fact that the establishment was screwing them over and they wanted to push back against that establishment. So they were going to support somebody who they thought was going to be tough-minded enough to go against them. And also it was anti-PC culture, those sorts of things, right? So some people would say, oh, you think he's an anti-establishment candidate? What's wrong with you? You're misinformed. Right. But let's hold on. There was a second anti-establishment candidate, remember? Do you remember the other one? Bernie Sanders, who everyone thought, that guy's really trying to fight it, right? There's somebody from the left, AOC, Bernie Sanders. Why aren't those people misinformed? Because they are. In fact, they are probably more misinformed when they think Bernie Sanders is anti-establishment, who literally was a project by the DNC to drive people in the Democratic Party, than to think Trump. So the people who thought Trump was anti-establishment were more right about that character over there than the people who thought that Bernie Sanders was anti-establishment when he was a complete creature and character built to support the Democratic National or the Democratic Party. So the most misinformed group was not those on the right, if you will, but those on the left who thought that Bernie Sanders was their guy. That was the people. But why does it help to say misinformed? All I'm going to tell you is I disagree with you. I disagree with you, Bernie Sanders supporter, in thinking that you have an anti-establishment character there over there. And I disagree with you, MAGA person, when you think you have an anti-establishment person there in Trump. Although I'm not going to sit there and say you're an idiot for thinking that, or either group is an idiot, because that's what's being hit at you. So the only thing is, it's almost like to say misinformed is just to say, well, I know better than you. All I can say is I think differently than you. So I'm gonna talk with you and argue with you. But do I know better? I can't say that. All I can say is this is how I think. And so it is a character of the left to sit there and judge the right and people on the right while they themselves, if by their own standards, would actually be the biggest fools on the block. If you wanted to use their lens, if we looked at the world through their lens, the biggest idiots in this world are people who support the Democratic Party and Bernie Sanders and think that they're fighting, getting an anti-establishment character. I don't agree with that. I don't think they are. But if you were going to use that framework, then the people you would think were the most foolish people in the world were the people who are right now about to vote for Biden or the people who voted for Bernie Sanders or tried to vote for Bernie Sanders in 2016. That's my problem, is the dissonance and the hypocrisy and the inability to see that the very critique you would level at right-wing workers is one that you must come back and ostensibly put against people who think they're operating as left-wing workers when both set of workers are being shoved into capitalist parties. And that is my problem. And that's why it just doesn't help to look at it that way, except to say, well, if those people are dumb, then we're the biggest idiots on the block.
Well, if I may just respond to that. I think the difference is where, and I can speak for myself as a former Bernie Sanders supporter, that there isn't hope. I'll speak for myself. There isn't hope in a Bernie Sanders just that he'll be the savior and lead the way. That once he is in, there's room less of a... other struggles are present, not the struggle against trying to prevent from certain societal rights that have been fought for to be rolled back. So rather than rolling back, there is a more of a push, and I would say a transition. Of course, I realized that it wasn't going to be possible within the Democratic Party for Bernie Sanders, and that's why I let go. But at that time, I had hoped there could be a more of a moving forward and more of a push and a fight, and the struggle would be moving forward rather than trying to prevent from rolling back, which is now what's happening with Trump. There's a lot of rolling back of things that, again, but such as the environment, for example, right?
Let's move on to the next part.
I'm just responding to what you said. As a former Bernie Sanders supporter, I understand, but that is a good point, Andy. I know there are people out there who might as well see Trump and Bernie Sanders as their only hope and their only savior, And there is, I won't deny, on the left, an arrogancy that exists, that is condescending, as Kenny had said as well, that the left does view the right as being misguided and misinformed. I think that the left also has our misguided and misinformed. And this is why, at the time, I even will say, I probably fell into as many of the false hopes at the time, and that's why I'm not a Bernie Sanders supporter today, and I'm not a Joe Biden supporter. But yes, I can see it, and I think it's a good point that you brought up.
I do want to move on, but I'm going to give you one homework assignment. I'm going to ask you to find maybe two Trump supporters, and maybe not by a week, but if you can find two Trump supporters and talk with them and find out if they believe that Trump is going to lead them to the promised land. Go ahead and see if that's true. That's it. I'm just going to leave it at that. See if that's what they say. If they do, I'm wrong.
I will just say to people that they can look at our previous episode on Florida, where we did have an interview like this, so they can see my homework assignment then.
You plagiarized him from the past. I do have, bringing it back.
I will. Hold on, Kenny. But yes, I will take it on, Andy.
I mean, in time. But I think it's worth doing to see if that's an accurate picture of the way they think
about it. Well, maybe we should. I'm sorry if I'm pausing here. You don't have to add this. But maybe we should interview two or three Trump supporters. That might be something on what's left, you know?
Yeah. That's not that's one I would do before John Alvarez.
All right, Kenny.
So I guess bringing it back to Bolivia, there are, you know, this is, so what's happening in Bolivia is happening in the context of a move to the right in the world, especially in South America. A lot of former left-wing, self-proclaimed socialist movement presidents, they're out, you know, whether it's Brazil, because there was a coup. A judicial coup in Brazil, whether it was in Argentina that was voted out, Chile that, you know, currently has a billionaire president similar to the US. So is Bolivia a point of, you know, hope? Is there something to be learned from Bolivia? Like, is Bolivia, you know, a blueprint, you know, for us? I don't know if you have any thoughts on this.
I think I'll respond by saying that I was listening to the BBC recently, Andy and Kenny's best friends over there. And
you know, I like democracy now. I don't listen to BBC.
alongside with Alex Jones. And I was listening to how there is this fear of the Bolsonaros in Latin America and other right-wing populist movements or right-wing forces within, like in Chile right now as well, which people have gone out in protests because of they decided to go out and almost like in an anniversary of what has happened since last year. And
they haven't stopped. Like, you know, COVID kind of like stopped what was happening. Yeah. But a lot of Latin American countries, including Chile, Colombia, the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico,
Haiti. Let's not forget Haiti.
But I mean, Haiti, I don't know so much. But the other countries I mentioned, they've been triggered by neoliberal policies. You know, classic IMF. You know, let's cut this, let's cut that, privatize this, privatize that, increase the price on this. So that's triggered people resisting. It doesn't have the character of an unorganized working class movement necessarily. And maybe that's different in Bolivia, maybe, you know, because like the mass parties is, there are members of the working class, like the peasants organizations more than anything. But that, yeah, just wanted to say that you know, Chile hasn't, it's not sudden. It didn't reignite. It's been happening. They've been going out and fighting the police. You know, in the way that, you know, I guess BLM here is in some cities, but over there, they've been going at it for a year now.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. And COVID was definitely a big hindrance for their cause and their movement. And so I do feel that if this is a victory for the left in Latin America, it's certainly something that Mexico has praised, as well as folks that support Venezuelan socialist, I'll air quote it there, socialist movement that's there. Is it something that I forgot the word you used just now, Andy. I was going to use your word. Is it the resurgence of a left, or the resurgence of a... yes. I mean, I think personally, I think it Mexico really affected me and AMLO. And I think there could be some false hopes, because in Mexico, we have, well, at the time that I was in Mexico and they were doing the elections, and there was this sense that AMLO was going to lead the leftist movement of Latin America in the wake of Bolsonaro, and there was hope, right? The Latin American Macron of Latin America, and I don't think, now that I know that and having had gone through that, I don't think that Evo Morales or Luis Arce is the hope that people are expecting, that they should be careful and cautious, because it's still within a system that is a capitalist system, and you can't just, it's like, you just cannot think that just because the word socialism is in that their party, the word socialism is in their party, that it will be a socialist socialist society. And people can take notes from Mexico. Whereas, again, I talk about the environment because I love it, but where they are now doing similar to Nicaragua, now a trail from in a forest in Mexico to be able to build, to get goods across. That's destroying, and that's under the AMLO administration. Or the immigration issue becoming a puppet under Trump's administration and doing the dirty work. And that is a leftist socialist worker doing this work, right? Because AMLO wasn't a polished politician and doing the dirty work on the border of Guatemala. And Melis, you were going to say something, can you?
Yeah, and, you know, like, that's something to point out with Evo Morales, that, you know, Bolivia hasn't been able to escape the trap of being an extractionary country. Getting extraction, you know, and that's basically the only difference, is that supposedly the mass government it repurposes or has a little more control it has better terms with the extractionary forces. It doesn't really control the productive.
The extraction expanded under Morales. Mm-hmm. Expanded. There was more damage and more land that was in rainforest land was ended up used for those extraction purposes, so those commodities could be sold. But more of those profits were refunneled back into the government and bought for to help people who were poor, literacy programs and things like that. But they had to do it in the way that Chavez did it, which is state-run capitalism.
And there was opposition by indigenous groups, because
yes.
Morales claimed that Morales claimed that he would protect the environment, and they're like, "What are you up to?"
And I think this gets to something that Eduardo was touching on a little bit when he mentioned, "Wait, this guy Evo Morales was trying to like extend his life," and because the right wing claims he was a dictator. We know that there was going to be lies, but there were left-wing critics of people who were seeing how he was consolidating power in a way to push down against the very movements from the left that had brought him to power in 2006, 2003, I can't remember which year it was. So there were people in Bolivia who were getting increasingly concerned about the consolidation of power that Morales and the MAS government was using to essentially link themselves up with a growing economy, the petrol business they had, the fossil fuel extraction, all that kind of stuff, because there were some political changes, I mean, pretty significant political changes that were made in the government, but economic changes were not that much at all in terms of how the economy runs. It was just a capitalist economy. It was like Venezuela. That's how they were doing it. And then when the bottom fell out from the fuel industry and things like that, then like Venezuela, they hit the wall. And that was partly what began to lead to broke up some of people's faith in MAS, and U.S. was able to use that, exploit that, as they are trying to do in Venezuela, to push him out and to get the folks that they wanted, and to get a firmer hand of control back in 2019. So all those things were problems then, again. And so there was no hope of socialism then, and that hope led to people's bitterness, and that hope was going to lead to a moment like this. The U.S. was able to use people's disappointment with Morales and the right wing's anger, the capitalist class anger at Morales in Bolivia, to get a firmer hand and put Bolivia on the leash. Do you think they're off the leash now? Do you think they just got off the leash? No, they are not. The U.S. knows this is a good situation. This is a situation for the U.S. where the House always wins. And here's what I mean. Arce is an economist, and he's going to be used as a left-wing justification for austerity, privatization, for all the things they're going to need to redo in the context of a collapsing economy now, because the commodity situation is not good. And he's either going to do that, and then produce the bitterness of the people in response to doing that, or they're going to fail. And then the right's going to come to power if they fail, and they can't succeed. The MAS government is a situation where they cannot succeed if they're going to do right by workers. They can't. So this is going to be a situation where the MAS will have to kind of fail in terms of what the socialist expectations that are had for them. And therefore, when they fail, then there's round two of the new fascist government that people are going to overwhelmingly vote for, who's again going to make Bolsonaro or Arnaiz seem like a nice person, but in comparison. So this is a rule that people are gonna have to learn something, because it's very unfortunate that people are saying we're gonna have to defeat fascism here in the United States by voting for Biden. You cannot defeat the capitalists or fascists at the ballot box. You can't. They will always win that game. And the only way you can defeat the capitalists is in working class struggle. Not just struggle, working class struggle of taking back all the means of production that workers can possibly do. And if you don't do that, if that is not the center of your strategy for fighting the capitalists, then it's over for you. There's no future. There's no hope of socialism. The only hope is bitterness and disappointment, which will lead to a right-wing populism that will have people begging for a strong hand that will then deliver them into even deeper bitterness. And that is the hamster wheel that all these countries, including the United States, is on. And that's what a Biden victory will mean. A Biden victory will mean that in 4 or 8 years from now, we're going to bring Trump back in front of us and say, wasn't Trump great? Just like we're doing with Bush, because the new character who we're going to get after Biden fucks everyone over is going to make Trump look like a Boy Scout. So this game, the only people who win at this game is the capitalists, and workers will continue to get screwed. And so this event, what has happened here in South America or in Bolivia, is just it's a victory for the United States again. It's a victory for the capitalist class, because they've gotten everyone to basically pretty much those movements that were anti-privatization, things like that in Bolivia, are largely either receded or they're captured under one of these parties by the MAS. And so it'll be MAS who's going to oversee the implementation of the next round of austerity.
So you're basically saying that Evo Morales en MAS is not socialism?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so how would it be different? How would it look different for them or for us, you know? And how do we break that hamster wheel? And I know you mentioned, you know, like taking the means of production, but what would be, you know, like some steps that point to a good direction?
So the first off, let's be clear. What Evo Morales offered, and even what Arce is offering, is 100 times better than what Biden is offering. You know, I would guess, like I would say, in terms of like, okay, we're going to try to maybe I'll give them that benefit of doubt. And so it's no good under Biden because there's nothing really being offered. But for socialists and revolutionaries, it's no good in Bolivia as well. This weak version, because it's all going to be funneled through the capitalist state. This is why the MAS, in order to be successful when they came to power at the height of the movements, had to cut deals with the capitalists in Bolivia who were connected to the United States or not connected to the United States, connected to China or wherever. And that situation is even more true right now. So this is the question is how can the working class become independent? Like, if it connects its future to MAS, there's no future for it because that's going to connect it to the extraction of profits out of Bolivia, which is what the government's going to be running on. So the working class has to give up on that game. Now, how does that happen? I do believe there needs to be the formation of a revolutionary party, and there needs to be a mass struggle around which the formation of independent institutions that are independent of MAS, of all the right-wing parties, left-wing parties, and the formations of workers' councils that would say, we're taking control of these things ourselves, and there's no sharing of profits, there's no profits at all. We're going to, with this shutting down of the workplace and putting it under the ownership of workers is being done under the idea of establishing working-class socialism here. So there's no ballot box you can make that happen at. And there's no ballot box that's going to, there's no one who you will elect, at least among these characters. Eduardo and I have mentioned what it might sound like if you were to get real revolutionaries in power, even at the lower levels. And all they would tell you is there's nothing to look for here. This whole thing doesn't work. You're going to have to fight for it on the ground. And my only role as an elected official is to basically expose the fact that this whole thing is a charade, that you're living under a dictatorship, and that to defeat that dictatorship, you're going to have to do your own actions and strikes in order to shut this thing down and put it up under working class ownership. That would be the only thing a socialist politician who tells you, I will do this for you with this system, is just building a different kind of mousetrap for you.
So basically, like, for me, the way I see it is like, for example, in San Francisco, right? Like, there has been talks about with the government, the city government, about repurposing some of the businesses that have closed, the buildings, for community organizations. So what I've been pushing is we need a game plan. You know, we're probably going to ask and they're never going to deliver, or they're going to deliver with some, you know, strings attached. So what I'm saying is let's take over that, let's protect it, and let's make it our own, make it, you know, community owned. You know, they have no say in this. This is our own institution. We're going to run it. So that's at a micro level. You know, and so obviously this has to be scaled up, you know, to more industries that are, you know, the more important industries. And that's how I see the difference of the character of the fight. Right, like through the ballot box, it always dies. It comes with strings attached. And like in Bolivia, just like in Bolivia here, I feel like the capitalists, even if they allow you to exist, they have their hands on your throat to squeeze at any moment. And that's what's going to happen to Bolivia. You know, yes, the MAS party is going to gain control, but they're surrounded, they're isolated, and they're dependent on a capitalist system who's going to choke them when they need to.
So that's use them, and in fact use the MAS party to extract more profit from the working class there. Yeah, but I know it's a good point. And this is why I feel, as a teacher who's now teaching remotely and who's been taken out of my school, how I feel that I do kind of feel we are now out of our seat of power. Because if y'all did that in your place, the only solidarity we could have offered you is to say, we'll do the same in our school and try to get other workers to do that with their schools to try to spread that. We can't offer that to you now. All I can do is say, I'll shut down, I'll log off.
Or I'll repost.
Yes. But that's not what we mean by solidarity. I mean, solidarity is an act, and it's an act of war. You know, when you make war against our class enemies, we will join you in that war. And if I can't go to my workplace, I can't join you in that war.
And this is how, you know, I see it too at a micro level, but moving into a macro level, that this needs to spread. So say we are successful for the short term, we take over that place, but the fight doesn't spread. They're going to isolate us. They're going to criminalize us. They're going to, you know, they're going to reinforce the legitimacy that they gain through the monopoly of power of violence to coercive means. So in order to fight those institutions, we have to create our own that are independent. And this has to grow at a macro level, you know, otherwise it's just going to be another, you know, flash in the pan.
Yeah. And some people will learn, in fact, we should never do that again. Cause one, that hurt a lot to do. That hurt. And maybe we should never do that again. So it people are reluctant to get their hand back in that fire because they're not guaranteed that others will join them. So you're absolutely right. It's all or nothing.
Yeah, and that's kind of my goal, to kind of make it tangible, because I've been pushing like a community, like people that are talking to city officials about, hey, we want to do this. Can you please help us? It's like, no, we need this. We're doing, you know, the job of what they're supposed to be doing. We're feeding people, you know, we're helping people with housing insecurity, you know, and so we're basically doing their job, and then we're begging them for space to exist. You know, no, it's just, again, me trying to put into practice, you know, my ideas, not just like believing in this realm of ideology. I'm pushing for this. I'm like, hey, like, okay, if we're going to do this, if we're going to decide to share a space for projects, you know, our community projects, you know, in some people like loosely, like, you know, throw, you know, like pay tribute to the Black Panthers and their programs. And I'm like, so let's be more radical than just begging these people to exist in our community that we are, you know, helping to sustain. You know, let's actually fight the war. Let's not pretend that, let's not put the Black Panthers in a museum. You know, let's put it into practice. I didn't think it was going to go this way. I wasn't sure. I'm glad, like, because it shows there is a connection of Bolivian workers and U.S. workers, you know, I hope someday it spreads, you know, and I don't know for sure if it'll happen in my lifetime. And, you know, all I can do is push, because, you know, or the other option is to sit down and cry and pretend nothing is happening and, you know, fill myself with fantasies. And so that's why I think, you know, it's important to analyze. You know, that's why I enjoy these conversations. I don't know if this will be in the show, but because, you know, that's the point, right? To have a conversation and share what you know. And, you know, instead of just like dictating to people and, you know, this is what it is. And so I just appreciate, you know, being here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that does it for this week's episode. What's Left is a weekly political podcast / channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes, wherever you found this episode, or on our blog at what-s-left.webno.com. And you can find past episodes to this podcast / channel there and connect with us. I remind folks that if you like anything that you have heard here, please share your favorite episode, rate, review, turn on your notifications, and subscribe to any of our 6 platforms on Spotify, iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. And if you would like to give us something, give us feedback about something you've heard or suggest something for us to cover, contact us through our blog. I'm Eduardo Barca with Kenny Cepeda and Andy Lipson. Vote, wear your mask, save lives. See you all next time.
I do not approve of this message.